You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Welcome back for hour number three on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George here till 10 o'clock. It is now 9 a.m. At 6:30 p.m. we kick off. So we are 8.5 hours away? 9.5 hours away, George? 9.5 hours away. It's a full day, though. We got plenty of time to go. I know you're saying that I should pace myself, but I'm just going to have to go on pure adrenaline for these next 9.5 hours and fire everybody up that I see on the streets. And I'll get it started early. I'll just start doing pregame now. And it doesn't necessarily mean drinking, but I'm gonna pregame. I don't want to be hammered for game time.
You start pregame drinking now. You don't have to worry about the game.
Yeah, exactly. I will fall asleep. By the way, full admission: Patriots Seahawks Super Bowl. Fell asleep at the end of it, so didn't see the excitement live. But when I woke up, I realized, like, as soon as I woke up, I just, like, started myself awake, and I looked at the TV, and I realized that there was something going on, but closed my eyes immediately and hit the rewind button and walked out of the room, came back in. This is, like, at, 11:30 or so, or maybe 11 o'clock. It wasn't long after the game, but then I rewatched it. So I got the first reaction out of myself, but it didn't happen live. Like, I probably found out an hour after everybody else.
Wow.
Yeah, I fell asleep. We were doing the early morning show at the time on our old platform.
Wow.
I have two little kids. It was ridiculous how little sleep I was getting at the time. And I fell asleep for the actual live occurrence of the Super Bowl, but it wasn't ruined for me by text or by Twitter or seeing what the celebration was. I realized in the moment that I woke up that I don't know what happened at the end of the Super Bowl. I got to rewind this. So thank God for the DVR.
You know, they have these things called coffee. Yeah, maybe a little Red Bull.
I know, but. It only works so much when you're on like 3 hours of sleep. And I probably had a few beers during the game. I wasn't hammered by any means. I was sitting on my couch by myself. But I just fell asleep.
That's a different problem. Like,
yeah. My couch was a little too comfortable. You know, it happens. It happens to the best of us. Yep. And this is a reason, by the way, that Pete needs DVR in case he falls asleep at the end of the Super Bowl.
Oh, Pete's a helpless cause. Oh, it doesn't know what a DVR is. Right, come on, Pete. I mean, that's what we had. DVR is...
I know what it is.
I didn't say you don't know. You don't use it.
I don't use it. But...
it's like saying I know what a cell phone is, but I don't have one.
Another full admission. This exact same thing that I just described happened to me a few weeks ago. I fell asleep at the end of Clemson, Alabama. And that was super exciting. And I did the same thing. I realized, like, oh, no. I fell asleep. I need to, and that one was, I was way gone. And it was a Monday night, so I wasn't even like drinking related. It wasn't like beers made me sleepy or anything like that. I just, what are you going to do? Like, you know, that game was interminable. It was a great, exciting fourth quarter. I fell asleep probably at the 9 minute mark, 9 minutes to go when the game really started to get good. Woke up. And in that instance, it was blown for me. I saw Dabo Swinney, but I was like hours past. In this instance, I had actually recorded the game because I was afraid I was getting tired, and I hit record so I could go back and watch just in case. And I woke up way after the game. I woke up at like 2:30 in the morning on my couch and had to go back. It was blown for me. I realized Clemson won. I was like, well, let me see how this happened, and went back and watched the fourth quarter. So, obviously I need to switch it up here, George. Maybe I need a less comfortable couch.
Yeah, punish yourself.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm just trying to be honest here. I'm trying to be an open book. Yes, I fell asleep at the end of one of the Super Bowls. Super exciting ending, but I didn't. I was able to watch it with my actual reaction and not jaded by realizing the winner or who had won the game. So,
who were you watching the game tonight?
It'll be the same setup. It'll be wife, kids will go to bed sometime during the first quarter, wife and kids, and probably in-laws coming over, father-in-law, mother-in-law, whom I enjoy their company. They won't be distracting. My mother-in-law will probably be more interested in the commercials than anything else, but we won't have to pause it for her. She will, frankly, probably help to put the kids to bed. She will be chatting with my wife, and it won't necessarily be about the game for them. I can sit and watch with my father-in-law and do that. I think it's just better off, like you and I talked about, like just be at home and not out in a place where you don't know what the setup is. You know, I don't want to go to Buffalo Wild Wings and I'm at a bad TV, or at the party that I told you about last week where there was halftime entertainment that I wasn't all that jazzed about. You know what I mean? Like, I just need a controlled environment.
Oh, I agree. I don't mind. Usually I do go out for these things. But tonight I am home. My brother's coming over, my nephew. If Dallas is playing, there'd be no doubt I'd be home. You know, I don't mind people coming over. Like I said, I want to be able to control the environment, know where the TV is and where I'm sitting. But as far as this, if someone had invited me over, or if my wife and I wanted to go out, I'd go out. Wouldn't have an issue with it at all. The story I told yesterday about them stopping the commercials, that was when I was much younger. That was the first time I had been at that house. Obviously, it was a mistake. A mistake I corrected by leaving at halftime. And we used a DVR. So we didn't miss anything. So, yeah. Listen, it happens.
It's a subtle, not so subtle shot at Pete Considori right there.
Not subtle at all. Pete, DVR. So you're a sports guy. DVRs are great for sports. You know, because you get rid of the commercials.
They're the best.
Fantastic.
The best for sports.
You can watch a 3-hour game in 45 minutes. It's fantastic. Sports. I mean, DVRs, they're great. I mean, has to be for me. I was thinking about this the other day. This was not a topic, although it could be on Old School Fantasy. Like a top 10 inventions. Over like the past 20, 25 years, DVR has got to be in there.
Yeah, I'd say so. Obviously, smartphones is going to be at the top of the list.
I think that's probably number one,
proliferated throughout society quite a bit here. I have over 200 million smartphones in this country alone. So one story I want to, by the way, Pete Considori will be on The Producers right after this show from 10 to 11, Pete?
10 to 12.
10 to 12. God, I got to get this right. Sorry.
No worries.
10 to 12, Chris Pavona, Pete Considori. Normally Don Burns will be on that show as well, but he's not there today. So he and Pavona will talk about how Pete needs a DVR and various other topics. You can yuck it up with those guys for the next 2 hours after our show, which has 45 minutes left or so. But one story, George, that I just saw during one of the breaks here, it's about Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo being determined to play next year. No plans to retire. Networks are coming at him, offering him jobs. And you and I have talked about it. It's a player's play situation. But also, I think it's indicative of he is now being given legitimate options after football. It seems really obvious that they're going to be set. He's going to be set to play in 2017 somewhere. It doesn't seem like there's any opportunity that it can be in Dallas. The money just doesn't work. You and I have talked ad nauseum about potential landing spots for him. The Arizona thing was open for 5 minutes. Now it's closed again. But, again, Tony Romo now being given some real options about what to do after his playing career. But with this back injury, you know, you and I have said, maybe you step aside, Tony, but it doesn't look like he's going to do it.
And once again, I'll say it, if a player wants to play and someone's going to pay him, I don't have an issue with it. Football is a little different, though, because you mentioned with your health here. You know, and Tony doesn't need the money. He's gotten paid a gazillion. You mentioned, though, all the networks are after him. He'd have a job anyway. You know, they would love to have him there. So
You think he'd be good on TV, by the way, as an aside?
I don't think you ever know until they're on TV. You know, yeah, some guys you think they will be and they're not. I don't like having all these sports guys on, players, because what do they add? I need you to add something. You know, some of these guys, they're just yapping at them. They don't add anything. I don't need that. I need you to add. You know, I need you to, you know, not to be afraid to be critical, to tell me stuff that we don't know. You know, I can go more for the inside guys, the Adam Schefters, Chris Mortensen's, guys who are giving you stuff you don't know, more than the players' view of things. I don't know. Romo seems to me like, I think he'd be too nice. I think a lot of the players are too nice. So maybe, I don't know. I just don't know how good he'd be. Interesting. But as far as playing, I don't blame him if he wants to play. Maybe he wants to go out on his own terms. But, man, I got to tell you, Mike, I don't want to mess with my back. You know, that controls everything you want to do later in life. He's got two young boys, you know, and I want to be able to play with my kids. I want to be able to go out. He's a big, avid golfer. I want to be able to golf. I want to be able to do whatever I want to do in my normal life. So if I'm Romo, I'm keeping my options open. Like I said, I think the two best situations for him, maybe three best, would be KC, Houston, Denver. If one of those, I'm knocking Arizona out because I expect Carson Palmer to come back. If one of those works out, fine. I'll give it a shot, specifically Houston.
Those are good teams, man. Those are great options, by the way.
That's what I mean. If I'm Romo, I want a great
option.
Can't
help them if it's Buffalo or New York.
No, I'm not. See, if I'm Romo, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to San Fran. I'm not going to Cleveland. Not going to Chicago. You know, I'm not going to the Jets. Not doing that.
You think Andy Reid would make that move?
I think he'd like to. I think all these teams would like to. It's all about salary cap. I think if there was,
you think Andy Reid's opinion on Alex Smith, he's our quarterback and all that kind of stuff, is for the public consumption?
Of course, man. This is
and
all
behind
game.
Closed doors.
What are they going to say? Oh no! Oh, we'd love to have Romo. They're not going to say that for a couple of reasons. Yeah. One, you're denigrating your quarterback you have right now, and two, because then the price goes up. Oh, they want Romo. Oh, that fourth round pick just became a third round pick. You know, so that's all these teams are saying they don't want him. They're all lying. Of course, they want him. You know, the question is, can they work it with their cap, and can they work out the compensation? That's the only issue here.
Yeah, the more I've thought about this, though, it seems more likely to me, and I could be wrong, obviously, it seems more likely to me that this could be a Peyton Manning scenario where they can't quite get the price that they're looking for, and they're just going to be better off cutting him so that the next team, so they eat whatever they eat, and I think the money will be, I think they can get the cap to a manageable hit for next year for him. And then the teams that sign him can make maybe a team-friendlier deal than he would otherwise have to them. So I think it's conceivable that Romo becomes a free agent as opposed to them somebody trading him for a sixth-round pick, seventh-round pick, or whatever it is. Does that make sense?
Sure. I agree with that as well. I think that's an option there. Jerry Jones is not going to hold out for a great offer here because he's close to Romo. You know, I think they want to do right by each other. So he's not going to hold out forever. That being said, he's not going to be traded for a sixth-round pick either. My guess is it would be around a 4-3 within incentives to move it up, depending on playing time there. Jones is not going to send Romo to a team he doesn't want to go to. He goes, I threw out San Fran. Maybe he wants to go to San Fran, LA. I don't know. But he's not going to send Romo to a team that Romo has no interest in. You know, I think they want to do right by each other. Jones is not going to hold them out. Hold out for the greatest offer possible. But the situation you're talking about wouldn't shock me at all. In that case, I think he'd be designated a post-June cut.
Yeah. So, you know, summer bidding war, so to speak, which would be interesting because, that June, that dead time of year, that could be the story of the NFL world at that point if Romo's going to be free to be bid on at that point. Now, I totally agree with you. I think Romo's back scenario plays a big role for me in how I'm evaluating, but Tony Romo's his own man. He wants to keep playing. He wants to give it one more shot. If he gets on one of these teams that you mentioned, frankly, those are great landing spots for 1 year and maybe even two if he's able to stay healthy. I think, frankly, his post-career physical outlook is going to be set in stone. I think it's going to be brutal for him over the years. He's going to deal with a lot of back issues. I think it only serves to get worse the longer he plays. But I can't judge him. I think he knows the risks that are in front of him. I'm sure he's been told ad nauseum about it. Now, I would also ask you one more thing on Romo. Do you see him more as a television analyst type, or do you think that he could conceivably get back into the mix like John Lynch or John Elway, becoming executives of some sort? You and I both said we don't see him coaching. He's not going to go through that grind with all the money he has, but potentially an executive?
I don't see. I mean, you don't know what's in the guy's head. I think he's a smart guy. I think he probably could. I think a lot of quarterbacks could. You know, they know the game. They understand the game. But, you know, do you want to put in that kind of hours? This is not something that's, you know, 15 hours a week. You got to put in a lot of time to do what Elway does. You know, it's more competition. And Romo, we know, is competitive. You know, so maybe it's because that's why he does the golfing. He's actually a very good golfer. Could be a pro golfer if he wants to be. So I get it, you know, if he wants to do that. But do you want to be away from your family? You don't need the money. You know, it's not like I understand some of the older players, you know, in Elway, who really retired before the big money came. You know, not that he needs the money, but I get it. You know, these guys.
He also could have owned 10% of the Broncos and missed out on that chance.
All right, these guys today don't need the money. So do they want to work 60-hour weeks? No, they don't need to.
Elway's done really well financially too. By the way, he doesn't need the money either.
He owns those car dealerships. But the question is, do you still want to do that? You know, or do you want to? Hey, I want to relax with my kids, have fun. You know, do the broadcasting thing. You know, it's not as much work as doing being a GM. You know, so I think it's interesting. Peyton Manning, same situation. What does he want to do? We know he has offers up the yazoo to do pretty much whatever he wants to do. If he wanted to be the GM of Indianapolis now, he would have been the GM of Indianapolis. And he felt he wasn't ready for it, or he wasn't willing to put in that kind of time. You know, so I think it's very intriguing to see what these ex-players are going to do because of John Elway. He is sort of, opened the bridge there.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, so Elway has blazed a new path here of being a executive, where it's not just GM. Like, Elway's the president of football operations. He's overseeing really an entire organization. I don't think we've seen too many players with as much power as he has. You know, we're not granted, I know Jerry Richardson played in the NFL for a season and now he's the owner of a team. That's a very different scenario. John Elway's an all-time great player, and now he's building an entirely new career path as an executive, and an impressive one. So it could be something that players look towards. I could see Peyton Manning in a role like that. I also think he's good on TV. So if Peyton wants to do that, he'll do it. I think him taking this year off is the right thing to do, right? You can really weigh your options like that. He's not hurting for money. He doesn't have to make a decision right away. It probably has to make a decision which way he wants to go in the next year or so. But with that being said, I could see him wanting to take time off and get healthy and be able to take a Sunday off to relax as opposed to going through the grind.
He can keep making commercials. They're funny.
Totally agree. Nationwide.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants. Peyton Manning can literally do whatever he wants. He can write his own ticket. Every network would – they would be battling over him if he wanted to be broadcast or work in a studio show. They'd be fighting with each other over him. If he wants to be a GM, he could have already done that. Taking time is always the right thing to do. And he's got more than a year. If he wants to say 2-3 years, that's fine. There's not a lot of people going to forget who Peyton Manning is.
I've said it before about Peyton. I think he's probably going to be looking towards becoming an owner of some capacity. Granted, he can't buy the team on his own, but being a key player in an ownership group, I think, is what Manning would look for. But those opportunities don't come along very often. You have to sit and wait. So that story on Romo, thought it was worth covering. We'll talk a little bit more about today's game after the break. Mike and George until 10 o'clock. Welcome back. If you just want to win your fantasy league and not worry about stats, GPs, or contrarian plays, then Old School Fantasy is the show for you. Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Famer Scott Engel and award-nominated writer George Kurtz and now Corey Parson give you all you need to know to coolly run roughshod through season-long leagues. The fun begins at 10 a.m. Eastern every weekday. It's Old School Fantasy on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on demand at fntsy.com/radio or available for download on iTunes. So Corey moves on to that show. Jake moves out to do other shows, and the train keeps on rolling. So, George, excited? You excited about your new morning slot?
Yes and no. I kind of like the 10 a.m. slot. I get my kids off to school, go to the gym, come home, and, write the radio show rather than the 3-hour break in between. But then again, I have days off, can no longer think about sleeping in, got to get up early for the show, do other things here. So, good and bad, look forward to working with Corey. I don't think I've ever worked with Corey other than him producing the shows on the other platform. I don't think I've worked with him. I can't remember to be sure. Miss Cha-Cha, believe it or not. I know Cha-Cha thinks he drives us all crazy, but it was funny. As I told Cha-Cha on Friday, on these shows, when him and Scott go at it, if you really listen, you can just hear me laughing in the background. I mean, it's funny to hear these guys. I mean, you literally yell. You would think these two hate each other. Listening to them just yabber on back and forth, hammering each other about Cha-Cha's stupid videos and Scott, being the king of nothing, pretty much. It's just hilarious. Really funny stuff. It's good. It's funny. But if you listen, you can just hear me in the background laughing.
Yeah. We talked about the awards earlier today. No real quarrels with it. But a guy that we didn't focus on, it's interesting because you and I had talked about him a lot during August. We talked with our guy Gary Davenport a lot about him. He obviously, between the holdout and the injuries, it was thought at one point that his rookie season might be lost. But Joey Bosa won the AP Defensive Rookie of the Year. Dak Prescott won the Offensive Player of the Year. Joey Bosa wins AP Defensive Rookie of the Year. You have to admit that it was looking like it could go sideways here, at least for his rookie season, and he ends up winning Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Good for me. I got him in that Dynasty League of ours. So
yeah, he did.
Happy about that. He's a man. He's a man among boys. He came in and made an instant impact, and he should only get better. You think about it, he did this without really a full anything. Camp, mini camps, and now he should only get better as he learns the league, as he gets stronger, as he gets more practice. The future is bright for Mr. Bosa.
And George, that defensive line and pass rushers in particular, there are very often struggles for a lot of defensive linemen as they come into the league. You can call Bosa whatever you want. He's a pass rushing defensive end. I know some people say, well, he's outside linebacker. You can determine him how you want. It's just a matter of, you know, it's Khalil Mack, it's him, it's Vic Beasley, linebacker, defensive end. I don't care how you characterize them. In any event, he's an edge rusher. And a lot of those guys can struggle in their rookie seasons, but for him to avail himself in the manner that he did, I think, to your point, means that the star is pointing straight up.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this guy has future Pro Bowls written all over him, you know, really all over him. So I think he's going to be a tremendous player. Truly do. Obviously, he has the bloodline. I think, I think he's going to be everything the Chargers thought. They didn't handle the situation well with the contract, but that's probably already forgotten. And it'll certainly be forgotten in the future. He's going to be well worth their draft pick. Cowboys are close to taking him as well. San Diego actually took him ahead, so they didn't have the opportunity. But he's on the Cowboys' radar as well for the same reason. Pass rush. Every team needs it. Every team wants it, which is something this draft is supposed to be loaded with.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of defensive linemen off the first round here. The offensive lineman draft, at least at the top end of the draft this year, isn't as strong as it has been in other years. Last year we saw, I think, 3 offensive tackles go in the top 13, maybe 4 in the top 16. You had Taylor Decker, you had Ronnie Stanley, you had Laramie Tunsil, Jack Conklin, right? All 4 of those guys went in the top 20 picks, I believe. So, and all made an impact. So we're not going to see that this year, despite the fact that teams are always looking for it. The Giants, New York Giants come to mind. They are really struggling with the Eric Flowers pick a couple of years ago, I think making it pretty plain that he's not an NFL left tackle. They have to move him over to right tackle. But the problem is, when you do that, then what do you do at left tackle? Piece it together with a veteran, put a rookie in there. It's the same problem all over again. As you can understand, it is a highly sought-after position. The Cowboys, you know, George, your team, they're good to go. They drafted offensive linemen, and people were scratching their heads there for a couple of years. What are we doing? Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, and it's all worked out. Now they have the best running.
But this is nothing new. How do you win in the NFL?
I agree.
Control the line of scrimmage both ways. Offensive line, defense line. It's been around forever.
People just get ticked off because they're not sexy picks, but I never have a problem with teams doing that and addressing it in that way. One other player that won an award last night, and I have to give you credit because you pounded the Jordy Nelson drum from July all the way through draft season, and you thought there was going to be no issues here. I had some questions with the Jordy coming off the injury and then the other injury in training camp, and I backed away from him in a draft or two. It's not like I only had 1 or 2 opportunities to get him. Jordy was a second-round pick, but in those instances, I did not pick him, and Jordy effectively made himself a first-round pick by his production. So, Jordy Nelson, comeback player of the year, AP comeback player of the year.
Not a shock. Once again, I think this is the right choice. I understand there are a lot of Cameron Wake owners or Cameron Wake fans out there that thought he should have gotten the award. Is he certainly a viable candidate for that award? You know, I wouldn't knock it, but, I mean, you look at Nelson. 97 catches, 1,257 yards, 14 touchdowns. I mean, those are, once again, all-world numbers. Wake didn't have all-world numbers. It wasn't like he had, 14 sacks or 17 sacks, something like that, where you had to think about him. He had a great season, sure, but not the season Nelson did. You know, I think, once again, a fairly easy choice here, Jordy Nelson. He was out all last season, had a major injury. Wake had the Achilles, Nelson had the ACL. I think they were both worthy of it, but I thought the right choice was Nelson.
Yeah, I was just watching a video of the they awarded the play of the year. It was trying to think what they call it. It's the Bridgestone Performance Play of the Year. So it's a sponsored one. But I would encourage everybody to go take a look at it. Mike Evans made a one-handed catch against the Falcons this year on the sidelines. The game was in Tampa. So whatever video you can find, I just watched it on NFL.com. It's a crazy play. Thrown behind him, he spins around, catches it with one hand, and gets absolutely lit up, but hangs on to the ball. So kudos to him for a great play. I always like watching those highlight packages. I'm sure you could find it easily today. So that's a little bit there. The clutch performer of the year, I don't even know what that means, but it goes to Derek Carr. I think they're just looking to give another award to a bright young star. And again, the AP Offensive Rookie of the Year goes to Dak Prescott. Would you have picked Zeke or Dak in that instance, George?
I think on Dak. What's the quarterback? There's so much to learn. And plus, I'll say it again, he was not expected to be the starter until, what, week three of preseason. You think about that. Week three of preseason, that's when he was found out after Romo got hurt that he was going to be the starter. So, yes, I'd pick Dak, too. In this day and age, the quarterback has so much more to do. Learn the defenses. Learn, you know, where's the mic? What play is best situated to go against this defense? Everything he has to learn. That's not to knock Zeke at all. He was great, but he's the running back. Yeah, other than picking up the blitz, it's pretty much hit the hole. Not as much to learn there. Quarterbacks are much more difficult.
Yeah. Trent, I want to talk a little bit about one of our writers, Brandon Murchison. He wrote an article about general manager changes that will affect fantasy in 2017. He really just focused on two teams in particular. And one is the John Lynch hire in San Francisco, the other one being Chris Ballard in Indianapolis. I would imagine I know which team you're going to pick because they have the quarterback in place. But I'm curious, if it were you looking at those two opportunities, do you kind of prefer the blank slate that John Lynch seems to have, or do you want to work with a mercurial owner, but you have the quarterback and just go from there?
Oh, you want the quarterback. I mean, I don't think it's even close. You have no idea what you have in Goff. Maybe I feel differently if Todd Gurley didn't fall off the planet. Oh, wait, with San Fran. Sorry, wrong team. But no.
Either way, it's another opportunity too. If you want to talk about McVay's opportunity to coach with the quarterback there, you know, there's a lot of different opportunities here. I'm just talking specifically about the GM though, Ballard, and going to Indy gets to work with Luck, but he's got a lot. He's got to gut that defense and kind of build it back up again.
Yeah, you have to take the quarterback. I mean, you just have to because you don't know. We see this over and over again. This is not a strong year for quarterbacks. So if you get the top quarterback, you don't know. Is it Deshaun Watson? You know, is he going to be the next Dak Prescott, the next whatever, Andrew Luck? I think I want the definite. You know, at least with Indianapolis, you know what you need to fix, right? You need defense. You need some offensive line. You know, you have the quarterback, so that's a big part of the problem. You have the quarterback, you can fix the other problems can be fixed in one offseason. You know, to be where it's, you know, you can put a Band-Aid on it. You can fix it in probably two. You know, when you don't have a quarterback, this could be multiple years. Until you have one, you're not going to be a good team. You look at San Fran. Kaepernick was actually okay. But now you have to probably draft one. Maybe you get one, a stopgap in free agency, you know, a Jay Cutler. Maybe you go to Tyrod Taylor, assuming he doesn't come back to Buffalo. I don't think it would be someone like Romo. You know, maybe you're going to make a trade. Garoppolo, Glennon. But what if you're wrong? What if I don't know what the price is going to be on Garoppolo.
They make a trade and they're wrong.
That's the problem.
It's devastating.
What if you get the top five overall pick? You're wrong. It kills. It just kills. And it could kill you. It could kill your GM before you're even a GM. Your future's just done because you guessed wrong. You gave away picks. You signed the quarterback. It didn't work out. You wasted the draft pick. You know,
if the Rams are as wrong on Goff as some people suggest,
it's a crusher.
They are going to be one of the worst teams in the league for a while. They will have this defense that is just going to waste away by having to shut teams out every week. And you saw, like, even how talented that defense is, you saw how uneven their play was throughout the year. It's a grind to have to try to do that each and every week. You can imagine we heard rumors of infighting in the locker room. And obviously, it got off the rails. They fired the coach, and here we are. They have the youngest coach in NFL history running the team, which I also have questions about. But, you know, it again, as you said, I don't know what the Niners are planning on. I think they have to heavily consider a trade if they don't grade out one of these quarterbacks as highly as number two overall in the draft. I just think you have to really consider that. I think Cleveland, they can go with the pass rusher if they decide that he grades out there. But if you're them, again, you're not going to want to reach for that QB. He has to be – that's the hard part, right? When you don't have a quarterback, you're going to be – feel compelled to pick one. But if they don't grade out as that kind of value, then the move is to pass on the quarterback, yes?
Well, I think in this day and age, if let's say Cleveland – let's say you're right. And I think you are right, by the way. I don't think Cleveland wants that quarterback number one. Well, then you have to almost trade the pick. Because there has to be a team out there that does want to take the quarterback number one that'll pay for it.
Yeah. It just takes one, right?
Just we can say all we want that these quarterbacks really aren't that great this year. And certainly what happened with Jared Goff law hurts the market a little bit as far as being the number one overall pick and then not looking so hot. But still, we say it over and over again. The NFL is a quarterback-driven league. You need a quarterback. Listen, most years, these quarterbacks that go 1-2 overall aren't the top players in the draft. It's because teams feel they need when they have a chance. And that's the big thing here. When you have a chance at the top of the draft to grab a quarterback, you have to do it. It's hurt Cleveland over and over again to pass on them. Right? I mean, they should have taken Wentz. Probably should have taken Goff that they had him number one. You can't keep passing on these guys. You're not going to win any other way. You're not going to win with the pass rusher. I don't care who the pass rusher is going to be. Reggie White coming out this year. You're not going to win with him without a quarterback. It's just not going to happen. And they don't have a quarterback right now. Now, their plan maybe to use their second round pick for a quarterback, you know, one of the not the top two guys. Or maybe that plan is to trade that second first-round pick for Garoppolo, for Glennon, whatever it might be. That's fine. You know, but I don't think Cleveland can pass on this. But more importantly to me, like I said, maybe you try and trade the number one overall pick of your Cleveland, and you don't get what you like. You don't like what you get back. You know, you're moving down to number nine overall and a third-round pick, whatever, something silly like that. You know, the price is just – this Cleveland's luck, this is just the year where no one wants to pay for a quarterback. And if that happens, fine, you take your pass rusher. If you truly don't believe in a quarterback. But what if your team just gets incrementally better? You know, and hey, all of a sudden you win five games next year. You don't have a top five pick anymore. Where's the quarterback coming from? Where is the quarterback coming from? That's why teams have to reach for it, because listen, Dallas got lucky with Dak Prescott. The Patriots got lucky with Tom Brady. This doesn't happen very often. Usually they're first round picks. You know, you can't keep putting it off, especially when your history says you can't get this right. So I think Cleveland either has to take a quarterback first overall if they like Deshaun Watson at all, use their second round pick to trade for a Garoppolo, or trade the number one overall pick to a team that believes in one of these college quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson, whoever it might be, and reap the benefits of that. And then maybe, you know, maybe it's not Deshaun Watson. Maybe the team he trade with takes Deshaun Watson. But maybe the number two.
I think he trade out of the first pick, George, and compile some picks and trade back into the end of the first round when the value makes more sense.
Well, I don't know about the end. I think you trade back when you see
into the middle, whatever.
When the quarterback you want is about to go. I think that's when you trade back in. Whether it's lower top 10, middle, end of the first round, whatever. The quarterback that you believe is worth it, that's when you trade back in and get him.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to take a break right here. George and I are going to talk about the Super Bowl, which we've avoided for a majority of the day. We will talk about the Super Bowl for the next 20 minutes after the break. Welcome back. Jake Seeley has been top three in the Fantasy Pros Accuracy Challenge the last 3 years. Manny Riccardi has won so many DFS tournaments that it's almost cool to tell a girl at a bar that fact. Almost. And Joe Pisapia, well, he's just a best-selling fantasy author. Put the three of them together, and you get what's arguably the most on-point fantasy advice show in the world. It's On Target Fantasy, where accuracy meets precision, and they get drunk, and they have a baby named Championship. It's a family name. On Target Fantasy, every weekday. Now it'll be 11 a.m. Eastern, only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, on demand at fntsy.com/radio, or available for download on iTunes. I believe that show is moving. What is it? What? Somebody get Pete, do you have the time on that? Is that 11? Is that 1? I know things have moved around a little bit, but anyway, he'll get it to me. On Target is they won for Best Fantasy Sports Radio Show of the Year, the FSTA Awards. I give those guys all the credit in the world for being a great show, for providing great advice. And it's 11 to 1, I believe, each and every day. Again, things are moving around. I'll make sure I have all the times down next week, and I'm sure I'll get grief from our bosses at the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, George. I've tried my best, but these shows are moving around. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, I think we got a couple of emails this week about, oh, we're moving shows. No, now we're not. Oh, 2 weeks. Yeah, no, now. Some shows now, some shows later. Good luck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I can tell you that each and every week, Jordan and I will be here Saturday and Sunday from 7 to 10 for the Roto Experts in the Morning, the weekend edition. Not much different from the week edition. Obviously, different personalities, different stuff to talk about. You know, sometimes we're on there. Sometimes they'll come on here. We'll start doing more basketball, baseball starting next week. I'll try to infuse a little bit of baseball in there today. We'll do some hockey because George and Pete know so much. But really, the task on hand today, as it's 9:40, the kickoff is less than 9 hours away, George. It's Super Bowl Sunday.
Is it 9 hours? Oh, it is 9 hours. Yeah, it's 8 hours, 50 minutes now. I'm still okay.
Yeah, you're still not fired up yet?
Listen, if Dallas is in it, I'd be much more hyped here. But they're not. It's a big game. I'm looking forward to it, but it's also 8-plus hours away. You know, if... I don't want to. If you start looking forward to it now, I'm going to be bouncing off the walls by the time I get home and still be six hours away. You know, so I've learned to just calm myself down. There was a time, Mike, I couldn't sleep the Saturday night before Sunday games. I'd be so jazzed, looking forward to watching the games on Sunday, that I couldn't go to bed. I'd be up till 5, 6 in the morning. I mean, doing nothing. You know, maybe watching TV, maybe kicking a ball around in my room. And it was so I've learned to calm myself down from that because I just don't. Yeah, you know, 8 hours, man, that's a long time.
Yeah, when I was younger, I couldn't shut it off either. I think that's a matter of age and, frankly, maybe a little less testosterone than I used to have. But, yeah, I just am able to calm myself down naturally more. Plus, honestly, having kids kind of distracts you from all that nonsense. You're so tired, you just got to focus on trying to get as much sleep as you can. You're still up at 5 in the morning and all that kind of stuff anyway. But, so back to the game. We haven't talked too much about the X's and O's today. You and I both have our predictions on. We laid them out yesterday. You think 38-35 Falcons. I say 27-23 Pats. You obviously have it more high scoring. One thing I would note regarding the Vegas lines, it has remained at -3 Pats for the majority of the last 2 weeks. There was a point where it was 3.5. Really Monday, Tuesday of last week, but it's settled in at -3 and has not budged. It is a hard line to move off of. I think they're seeing an equal amount of money. I would imagine it's going heavier towards the Pats, but they're not likely to move the line that much, especially at this late hour. I know the game's 9 hours away, but there would have to be a significant amount of money put on the Pats, and there already has been a significant amount of money put on both sides. So I don't think that line moves, but what has moved is the over-under. Just about 24, 48 hours ago, George, the over-under was 59.5. It has come down a full point to 58.5. I'm looking at a particular site. Other people may have different looks at it, but this is an aggregating site which gives you a picture of all of the Vegas sports books. So 58.5, I think the only thing I would say that it tells you is that money is coming in on the under, so perhaps people aren't expecting it to be as high scoring as you are.
Well, what does it usually happen when you expect the game to be all high scoring or, you know, a defensive showdown? Usually the opposite does happen, or maybe it's somewhere in the middle. That's a very high over under. I mean, so it's letting you know what Vegas is.
Really high, yeah.
Yeah, Vegas is telling you to bet the under. You know, that the over is not going to happen. My only problem in Super Bowls, I'll say it again, these one game, you know, one game and done things, if things tend to go wrong, they really tend to go wrong. That's why we get some blowouts here.
God, I just hope it's not a blowout.
Same here. I just want to be entertained. That's all I want.
The Falcons are not going to blow out the Pats. I just don't see it. And so that's what worries me. I just have this feeling. And a good buddy of mine who's a big Pats fan, he flew down there last night. He's got a pair of tickets, and he's so fired up. He waited for years. He hadn't gone to any of the other Pats Super Bowls, so he's making this trip. Ironically, he graduated BC with me. He's a longtime friend of mine named Ryan, and he's fired up. So the irony is that he's got to root against Matt Ryan today. Not something I'll be doing or most of my other friends have to do, but you know, I'm worried that this turns into a blowout if things go sour for the Falcons. I think Dan Quinn's experience in having been in this scenario is helpful. Would you agree?
You would think he should know how to calm his team down. No, I think for the Falcons, the most important thing is the first quarter. You know, to calm down, not be overhyped, make mistakes. You know, once they get through that, it's just a football game.
Yeah, they scored a touchdown, I believe, on the in the first drive in their last seven or eight games, right?
Eight straight. Touchdown.
Yeah,
first
eight
drive. Eight, not,
touchdown.
Not a score, a touchdown. Eight straight games.
That's just racing down the field, and that's like having a really good play-calling script. That's having explosive players. That is just that's a good job all the way around, coaching players alike and just being in the right mindset and being able to execute in that manner. So I talked about it a little bit yesterday. I'll just sort of give my thoughts again. What I think the way I think the Falcons can win is – two ways in which you're going to do it. One, they're going to have to try to get pressure on Brady up the middle, rushing four, not blitzing, not sending Vic Beasley every single play to try and take Brady down. Obviously, they will do some of that, but it's going to be trying to disrupt the pass up the middle. Secondarily, on the offensive side of the ball, I think Matt Ryan is going to have to have the game of his life for two reasons. One, they're going to bracket Julio Jones in the same way that they bracketed Antonio Brown. Julio's size and ability is going to allow Matt Ryan to have a bigger target. But that being said, he was still going to have to throw in between defensive backs to try to get the ball to Julio. So he's going to have to be very sharp there. Also, I think the Pats will do a pretty good job stuffing the run like they did to Le'Veon Bell early last week. Obviously, that game got off the rails. So I think what they will have to try to do, and where I think they can make some hay, is to get the Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, the running backs, out in space, passing the ball. I think that's a battle that they can win. And I think they're going to have to do all of those things in order to beat the Pats.
I agree.
Makes sense, George?
I mean, I agree. I mean, like I said, the odds are stacked against the Falcons. I mentioned you can't be a deer in the headlights. You know, oh, Super Bowl, you're stuck with all the pictures, all the confetti, all the lights, big game. You start just not being yourself. And I think it's where Quinn will calm his team down. I think he'll get the team ready, tell them what to expect. You know, so I think they'll get past that somewhat. And then I think the next big thing for them is get over the first mistake. I don't know what the first mistake will be. Maybe it's an interception and a fumble. Maybe it's just a bad penalty.
Special teams, something like that.
Right, yeah. Something silly that happens. It doesn't have to be a turnover mistake, but get past the first mistake that might cost you. Maybe it cost you a first down, a chance to score on a drive. Maybe it gives New England first down and it gives allows them to score. Whatever it might be, you need to get past that first mistake because generally everybody makes mistakes, right? There are very few football games that are perfect, but you can't let it snowball. And that's what we seem to see in a lot of Super Bowls. One mistake snowballs into three mistakes, and then the game's over.
Yeah, the Broncos, you know, botched the opening snap a few years ago.
Exactly.
It's 2-0, and then the game is already off the rails at that point. You know, it's a good point what you said, getting past that first mistake. At halftime of the Steelers-Pats AFC Championship game, the Steelers had been outplayed, and they'd made a bunch of mistakes. But it was only 17-9. So at that point, you have to gather yourself and say, you know what? We haven't played a good half, but we're alive. Let's get this done. And the Pats took the ball, uncharacteristically, took the ball at the beginning of that game. So the Steelers had the ball in the second half. All they needed to do was execute on that first drive, take it down the field. Let's possibly score, tie this game up. We got a ball game. Instead, nope. Quick drive, pass it off to New England. It's a 16-0 third quarter. And it's, you know, it's a blowout. It's, to your point, they couldn't get past those mistakes, and they never rallied to get their feet under them in that game.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, because so it's one mistake begets another mistake begets another mistake. You can't fall into that that trap. So anyway, it's just a trap. Play football. In the end, trust what got you there. You know, you forget about New England, how great they are, you know, and how they've been to 8,000 Super Bowls in a row. You got to forget about that. You remember how good you are. You know, I think it's a tough thing to do. Because we could talk about it still, blue in the face. Quinn, you know, Coach Quinn's been talking about it as well. In the end, you're going to be nervous. You're going to have butterflies. You just are. You probably are nervous and have butterflies before a regular season game. More or less this game. You just can't let it control you.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break right here. We'll get George and I's final thoughts on the game. I want to ask him a little bit more about his Falcons pick. It's Mike and George for another 10 minutes. back for the final segment on this Super Bowl Sunday. Thank you for listening this morning. The producers are up next with Pete Considori and Chris Pavona. Don Burns off this week. So, George, I stated my reasons for how I think the Falcons can win. Unfortunately, I think the calling card of the New England Patriots of keeping Tom Brady clean is going to happen. I think Atlanta will struggle with being able to execute all of those things that I mentioned. If they get one of the three, maybe they compete. If they get two of the three, maybe it's close, as I suspect. But being able to pull off all three of those things, I just hope Matt Ryan plays a clean game. I don't want to see Matt Ryan get the moment be too big for him. I don't expect that. I think he'll play pretty well. I think they need to obviously avoid those turnovers. I think they could get the ball out in space to the backs. I just don't think they're going to be able to pressure Brady enough, and I think he's going to have too much time to sit back and find Edelman and Hogan. And honestly, I think it'll be a pretty big game for LeGarrette Blount. If I was picking an MVP that wasn't a quarterback, I would go with LeGarrette Blount today. So I say all that to ask you, you did pick the Falcons, so I assume you think all of those things they will be able to execute.
I'm going to stick with the Falcons, but the Alex Mack thing really worries me. I think he's the key to that offensive line. I'm not going to call him the key to the offense, but I think he is the key to that offensive line. If he has to go out early, you know, if he can't, like, he can only play two series, a quarter, whatever it might be, I think this really hurts Atlanta. I don't like this at all. You know, I said it yesterday. I know I told this to Scott Engel on Friday. I think I said it to you yesterday, too. I'm picking the Falcons, but if I had to bet my own money, my own cash, and it was a significant amount, I'd go with the Patriots, mainly for the reason is I can live with losing on the Patriots. They are the Patriots. You know, probably the greatest team of the past 20 years. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. I can understand losing with that. Don't want to lose with Tom Matt Ryan, especially now with Mac out. Really, I'm getting more and more worried about this.
Yeah, and I think what's a big concern there too is say Mac is out, they're not getting the push they need running the ball. I think because he's so good at this, Belichick, along with Matt Patricia, would likely be able to make in-game adjustments, especially at halftime, and figure out a way to take away even more of that offense, right? If they're not having to focus so much on the running game in between or just off the tackles, they might ramp up coverage of the backs coming out of the backfield. They might throw an extra guy and be jamming Mohamed Sanu or Taylor Gabriel or whomever they can to take yet another weapon out of it. They're just looking to take out weapons series by series. They did it to the Steelers. Once Bell was out, they really kind of they shut it down with Antonio Brown. In fact, he never really got it going until late in the second quarter. So I think that would concern me as well. I think it's probably a factor in why I picked the Patriots from the beginning. It all plays a role. I have some concerns about them being able to get a push. But, you know, if Alex Mack is out there and they're running the ball, they got to keep Brady off the field. Both teams are really focused on trying to keep the opposing quarterback off the field. It's not like that's not a plan for teams each and every week. But in this particular instance, the quarterbacks have been so good this year. The best defense is a good offense, and trying to take the air out of the ball. I think that's what the Patriots are really going to try to do to keep the Falcons off rhythm. That's why I'm going with LeGarrette Blount as the alternate choice to MVP. I say alternate because you really want me to not pick the quarterback of the winning team? I mean, it's Tom Brady. There's pressure to pick him now before the game even started.
No, I agree. Like I said, I expect whichever team wins, the quarterback will get the MVP. Blount would also be my second choice. I think they're going to run the ball with Blount a lot. I think they want to keep that Falcons obviously off the field. I think they also know that Blount, odds are he can rip them apart. The Falcons do not have a stout front seven. Linebacking core it's solid, but it's not great. And the secondary, listen, points are going to be put on the board. I don't see this being a defensive battle whatsoever. I don't see this being a 21-17 game. I don't see it being double that. A lot of points being put on the board here. Both teams are going to have to put that ball in the air. Like I said, George Collin, what do you want to see, a 700-point ball game? He just might see it in this game. I think it's going to be fun. I have no dog in the fight. I don't really care who wins the game. I just want to be entertained. I want to see a good game. I don't want to be going at 9 o'clock at night and wondering what's on TV.
Yeah, like I said yesterday, the a telling stat with Atlanta being able to control the ball, I believe it is 25 carries. When they've ceded 25 carries or more to the opposing team, Dan Quinn is 0-11 in his two seasons. He is 21-2 when they limit the opposing team to under 25 carries. So clearly a part of that team is being in rhythm, keeping their offense on the field. So that's kind of where we're at, folks. It's 6 hours over the last 2 days. We talked Super Bowl, we talked baseball, we talked movies. We did everything we could to try to break down the game. My MVP pick, I'm going to just say LeGarrette Blount because it's too boring to pick Tom Brady. I do have the Pats 27-23. George has the Falcons 38-35. George, enjoy the day.
You also, Mike, have a good time.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of a peak of you getting excited there.
Good luck to
you. I think I accomplished my goal.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stay awake. I promise I'll be doing Red Bull sugar-free only, maybe some Coke Zero. I don't know. They're not sponsors of ours, but I just like to name drop. So that's where we're at, folks. Thank you for listening. The producers are up next with Bavona and Considori. Have a great time watching the Super Bowl. Eat your face off. Drink your face off. Have fun.